What we have here, I believe, are some known economic unknowns. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Tuesday, today, April the 19th. Good as always to have you along, everybody. And we begin today with our most profound professional apologies with what we don't know. The International Monetary Fund was out with its new forecast for economic growth this morning globally, from 6.1% growth last year to a relatively not great 3.6% growth this year. And while it is always difficult to predict the economic future, right now that is more true than usual. Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer gets us going.
Picture an elephant. It's standing in the dark, surrounded by a group of people who are touching the elephant, trying to figure out what it is.
And they know that they aren't getting the full picture, so they know they're uncertain.
Claudia Somm is a former Fed economist, now with the Jane Family Institute. She says this is what economic forecasting is like right now.
And then we're at the point where that elephant has started running, right? So not only are we not getting the full picture, we can't even totally keep up with this thing.
Today's IMF report is littered with caveats. It says its economic growth forecast assumes the war stays inside Ukraine's borders, Russia's energy sector is spared from further sanctions, and the pandemic doesn't get any worse. IMF economist Malhar Nabar is one of the authors of today's report. Uncertainty has been plaguing his forecast since the start of the pandemic, and now there's the war.
The war and widespread sanctions on Russia. That is something that we don't really have historical precedent for in recent memory.
And it could skew the report's predictions for global inflation this year, which the IMF pegs at 5.7% in advanced economies and 8.7% in emerging ones. Ukraine is a big producer of commodities like wheat, which it can't grow or export during the war. So commodity price hikes could nudge up inflation. Gregory Dacko is chief economist at Ernst & Young, and he also has to make economic forecasts. He says you have to be humble.
There are very likely going to be developments that depart from your baseline assumptions.
And then be nimble enough to fold those unexpected developments into your forecasts. I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
On Wall Street today, forecast, schmorecast. It's going to be the happy music when we get there. We direct your attention now to the close of yesterday's program when I mentioned research from the Peterson Institute for International Economics that shows lifting some of the Trump-era tariffs that are still in place could shave 1.3 percentage points off inflation. And that is not nothing. But it did get us wondering about the lasting effect of those tariffs 3 or 4 years on now. So we got Kevin Feig back on the phone. He runs Foreign Parts Distributors. That's an auto parts company down in Miami that has been paying those 25% tariffs all these years. Kevin, it's good to have you back on.
Pleasure to be here, Kai. Thank you.
So it's been 3 years, almost 3 years now, I guess, since we talked to you back in the days of the very high-profile trade war that was the economic headlines of the day. Now the headlines are different, but your situation, how's it been?
Yeah, so a lot has changed in the last 3 years since we've spoken. You know, the situation with the tariffs have not changed one bit. You know, we're still paying 25% tariffs to the United States government on every product that we import from China.
Give me a for instance. How much are you paying to the, you know, the Treasury of the United States, right? Because as we talked about in this first interview, not only are consumers paying, but companies are paying as well. What are your, you know, I don't know, however you categorize it, monthly tariff-induced costs, would you say?
Yeah, so the monthly payments have gone up tenfold.
Tenfold?
You know, we use, well, traditional duties. Most products were at 2.5%, so going to 25, you know, it's a substantial increase. We used to pay, you know, anywhere from maybe $30,000 to $60,000 a month in duties to U.S. Treasury. Now you're looking at $300,000 to $600,000 a month.
It's not like you can rejigger an automotive parts supply chain on the fly. And we talked about that 3 years ago when the tariffs were still relatively new. That said, it's been 3 years. Have you been able to source your stuff from someplace that is not as heavily tariffed as Chinese imports are?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, our company, it's taken time, it's taken a lot of resources, but we have been able to move maybe 15 to 20% of our sourcing away from China. But moving certain key part numbers from a factory in China where you have a long-term relationship, say moving that part number over to India, you might be able to reduce your landed costs, but you're risking, you know, supply chain shortages, longer lead times, perhaps quality issues, which if you're dealing with auto parts is a major risk factor.
I'm going to guess that, well, maybe not the U.S. trade representative herself, but you could probably get some people in the USTR's office on the phone and jump up and down on their desks, figuratively speaking. Have you done that?
So, funny you should mention, I was on a an industry call with the USTR representatives a month or so ago. You know, we were all telling these guys, hey, look, the only people being hurt with the tariffs are U.S. companies and U.S. consumers. It's self-inflicted economic pain. They know, and certainly USTR Tai knows. She's a brilliant woman. You know, just to kind of do a little quick math, say I was buying a ball joint for $5 4 years ago. That item would land here in Miami, you know, roughly of $6. You factor in the 25% for the tariffs, plus the huge explosion in freight, which we haven't touched on yet. That same item that was landing at $6 is now landing at $9. Where does that $3 go? We have to make it up somewhere. You know, we pass it down. And many of the customers that we sell to are large, you know, national retailers.
Right.
And they do their markups. And, you know, my cost going up $3 ends up at a $15, $20 increase at the register.
I didn't mention freight because, honestly, I just figured everybody was well aware of the increased freight costs in the pandemic, and we've talked about it so many times, but that obviously was my bad. But let me ask you this. I don't want to mischaracterize what you're saying, but you sound deeply frustrated, a little bit bitter, kind of angry, but you've made your peace that this is the way it's going to be, and you just got to run your business.
Yeah, I mean, look, you have to deal with what you're given. And right now, we've accepted the fact that the tariffs aren't going away. We've accepted the fact that freight has kind of spiraled out of control. And whatever price increases we're passing on, those are always trailing behind our cost increases.
So you're making less money. That's what I hear you saying.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yes.
There you go. There you go. Man. Kevin Feig, he's the president now. He was vice president last time we talked to him. He's the president of Foreign Parts Distributors. That's an aftermarket auto parts company in Miami. Mr. Feig, thanks for your time, sir. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, Kai. I appreciate it.
This isn't necessarily my business, but how many streaming accounts do you have? General answer is fine, maybe more or less than you can count on one hand. How about that? Point is, there's a whole lot of competition out there in the streaming space right now. See also Netflix and its quarterly earnings report today. It lost subscribers globally in the first quarter and expects subscriber loss to accelerate in the next couple of months. Shares are down more than 40% this year, and one of the many questions that the company is going to face almost certainly is going to be how it will replace all that lost subscriber revenue. So what about ads, huh? Marketplace's Matt Levin took a look at that.
Jay Rutkowski used to have a streaming seasonal romance with Logan Roy.
HBO is one of those services that we typically subscribe to for like 4 months at a time when a new season of a show we like comes out.
Rutkowski was willing to pay $15 a month for a fling with Succession on HBO Max. A year felt too expensive. But when a cheaper ad-supported version came out, Rutkowski ponied up for a longer-term relationship. He doesn't love the ads, but
it's less annoying than watching on traditional TV.
HBO, Disney Plus, and other big streamers are now becoming more okay with ads, hoping to lure more price-conscious consumers. Netflix has held out, partly because it fears damaging relationships with subscribers, says Michael Smith, a marketing professor at Carnegie Mellon.
It potentially damages the storytelling, and it potentially dilutes the brand.
Netflix has spent lots of money for prestige movies. Martin Scorsese may not want Flo from Progressive making cameos in The Irishman. But there's a less artistic reason Netflix may be reluctant to go commercial, says Matthew Bellany at Puck News.
The advertisers are going to want to know who's watching the content, and you're going to have to start releasing more detailed consumption data.
Audience data that Netflix has traditionally hoarded like gold. But Bellany says Netflix isn't just competing against other streaming services. Across the pond, there are already signs it's competing against gas and groceries.
Lots of people in the UK are canceling their subscription service due to inflation fears.
Of course, there's a precedent for paying a base rate for television with commercials, cable. I'm Matt Levin for Marketplace.
Coming up,
the Brad Pitt of the cougar world.
Yeah, I got nothing on that one. First, though, let's do the numbers. Dow Industrial is up 499 today, 1.4%, 34,911. The NASDAQ up 287 points, more than 2%, 13,619. The S&P 500 added 70 points, about 1.6%, 44.62. With a federal judge striking down the federal mask mandate yesterday. How about airlines? United up 4.5% today. Delta rose more than 2%. On the Informed Democracy Beat, word that the number of reporters assigned to cover state capitals for U.S. newspapers continues to decline. That is according to the Pew Research Center. It found the number of reporters who cover state capitals full-time has fallen 34% in the past 8 years. Bond prices fell as well. The yield on the 10-year T-note, 2.94%. You're listening to Marketplace. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts. This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. A story now about how tough it can be to take something away from people once you have given it to them. We spent a lot of time the past 2 years talking about small businesses in this economy and what the government was doing to help them out through the pandemic. But as things have been getting better, there are plans to take some of that small business relief money that hasn't been used yet, about $5 billion or so, and spend it elsewhere. You know who's not happy about that? Yeah, those small businesses. Marketplace's Lily Jamali's on that one today.
The first few months of the pandemic almost spelled financial disaster for Altus Campus, an online education company in Madison, Wisconsin, run by Daniel Guerra Jr.
We had like no cash that came in for probably 90 days. I mean, it was tough.
Guerra pivoted his company from online videos to live webinars. That helped, but the big boost came once Guerra got pandemic aid three times from two different federal programs.
That was an instrumental lifeline for us. I mean, we'd be out of business if we had not had help.
That kind of help might get cut back as the Biden administration looks to pay for its healthcare response to the pandemic. Under Republican pressure to cut spending, around $5 billion set aside for small businesses could get rerouted. That might not be so bad, says the University of Chicago's Eric Zwick.
Say, if a restaurant is having trouble keeping customers in because like it used to serve a lot of office workers and those office workers aren't coming back, at some point that restaurant needs to change its business model.
And keeping support in place for too long might hinder that, says Zwick. But John Arensmeyer, CEO of the advocacy group Small Business Majority, says these companies still face a lot of uncertainty.
About prices, they're being impacted by inflation, uncertainty about rebuilding their workforce.
He's hoping lawmakers keep small business aid intact when they return from recess next week. I'm Lily Jamali for Marketplace.
Think for a second about all the times that voice is a key part of your experience in this economy. Smart speakers, sure, those are the easy ones. Buying stuff, ordering online using them, right? Also, though, cars more and more. Restaurant drive-thrus, retail checkout kiosks. And you know what that is, right? That is a business opportunity. Companies and brands want to make sure they're represented with their own voices. And as Marketplace's Stephanie Hughes reports, that is a growing market.
As a voice actor, Bev Standing has done a lot of different jobs. Commercials, explainer videos, anthropomorphized plants.
I'm an animated plant troll in the Phipps Conservatory in Pittsburgh. You have to answer three questions before you can pass.
In that case, Standing knew how her voice was being used, as she has with every other job she's done. Then, in late 2020, she realized her voice was being used for something she hadn't approved.
A friend of mine, a colleague, sent me a TikTok video and said, "This is your voice, right?"
Then Standing's kids started sending her TikTok videos, too.
And I'm going, "Yeah, that's absolutely my voice." And I was the original text-to-speech voice on TikTok, unbeknownst to me.
Standing had recorded 10,000 sentences for a translation program.
Every sentence I said had to sound like this.
TikTok got a hold of those recordings and used them so people could enter text and have it said aloud on the platform. Standing filed a complaint with ByteDance, which owns TikTok. The company settled and her voice is no longer on the app. But the whole experience made her want more control.
AI voices are here to stay. However, I believe that the voice actor has to have some say in what their voice is being used for.
Standing got connected to a startup called Vocal ID. It's a kind of marketplace for voice talent that lets an actor give the okay before their voice can be used in a particular project. It's run by Rupal Patel, a professor of communication sciences at Northeastern. It spun out of her work to give people who couldn't speak anymore distinct voices. She says it's also meant to help voice actors compete with the automated voices already out there.
Could they do something that right now that job is actually going to an Alexa or a Siri to just have an automated voice produce it, right?
Clients pay a subscription to Vocal ID. $44 a month gets them access to two voices. They can pay more for more options. Once on the platform, they can try different voices out. Say, for example, and I'm not necessarily advocating for this, Marketplace wanted to use different voices for its reporters. Just enter some text, generate a voice reading it, and...
I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
That's Bev Standing's voice on the platform. There are faders that will let you change the voice, slow down the tempo, raise or lower the pitch, or add a quality like excited. Here's that same voice, slower and more excited.
I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
Lots of companies are experimenting with these kinds of voice signatures and figuring out what kind of qualities they should have.
A human voice may have only certain attributes. Your voice has certain attributes and my voice has certain attributes.
Sunil Gupta researches digital strategy as a professor at Harvard Business School.
But if I want a combination of different things that you and I offer, well, how do I get that into my voice signature? And I think that's where the AI will help you.
Gupta says there's growing demand for AI voices beyond Siri and Alexa, which many people recognize now.
So if I'm Mercedes, I certainly don't want to hear the Alexa voice in my car, which reminds people of a completely different brand than who I am.
There are lots of companies that want to sell this service to car makers or anyone else who wants a bespoke voice. In fact, Amazon, which sold us Alexa, will create new voices. So will NVIDIA, as well as startups like Vocal ID. As interest grows, actors are trying to make sure they stay in the mix by providing more options. Bev Standing, who's Canadian, just created a second voice for Vocal ID. She describes it as a kind of transatlantic accent that has roots in the way her mom, who is British, spoke.
It's not an accent that sits any town or city in England. I think you're from England. Every once in a while, I'd blow a word.
Standing says her work in AI is still a tiny fraction of everything she does.
I hope it stays as a small percentage. I don't want to see the voiceover industry, you know, stop using real people.
But Standing says it's nice to have her AI voice working for her while she is busy doing other things.
I'm Stephanie Hughes for Marketplace.
There's an infrastructure groundbreaking here in Southern California at the end of the week. A bridge over the 101 freeway and an access road, 165 feet wide, 200 feet long, crossing 10 lanes of traffic that carry 300,000 cars a day. A bridge designed, as most are, yes, to get its users from one side to the other safely and without getting hit by a car. The users in this case, though, are the four-legged residents of the mountains around here. The price tag is about $90 million, most of it private money. Money that has, by the way, taken a decade to raise. From KCLU, Michelle Loxton reports.
This is what it sounds like when 300,000 cars pass through a single spot every day. This is Highway 101 in Agoura Hills, just north of Los Angeles. Soon this spot will be the location of a giant bridge going over the highway. But instead of supporting cars, the bridge will be filled with soil and plants. This wildlife crossing will reconnect habitats that have been cut off from each other for decades. Cut off because of the impenetrable wall that is Highway 101.
The wildlife are already sort of coming to this area. They get here and they're like, I'm not crossing this, and they turn around.
That's Beth Pratt, the California Regional Executive Director for the National Wildlife Federation. She's led this project. When we meet up at the future location of the crossing, Pratt is wearing a knitted sweater with Mountain Lion P22 on the front.
Who I call the Brad Pitt of the cougar world.
That's right, a cougar celebrity who is the inspiration for the crossing.
For me, what he did was get the public engaged, which was really important.
P22 has fascinated the public because a decade ago he managed to cross a number of major highways unhurt and got himself to Griffith Park near Hollywood. He still lives there today. The idea of this lonely bachelor cougar spurred the campaign to connect wild spaces. The Wildlife Federation started going to the public to raise money for this project back in 2014. It was priced at $90 million and they raised the money through state funds, 40%, and private philanthropy, 60%. The biggest single private donation was $26 million. Now, P22 won't benefit from this particular wildlife crossing. He's miles away from the crossing site and too cut off at the moment. But many other mountain lions will. I hiked up one of the hills close to the highway to get the bird's eye view of where the crossing will be located. Seth Riley joined me.
Really important thing we've learned about the mountain lions is that genetic diversity in the lions in the Santa Monica is very low, basically the lowest that anyone's seen.
Riley's with the National Park Service and Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area. He says the genetic diversity of these mountain lions is low because of inbreeding. Male cougars are mating with their daughters, granddaughters, and even great-granddaughters. How might this wildlife crossing help?
The goal is not for the population to get bigger, because it is what it is. The goal is for it to be better connected to the other populations.
And it's not just mountain lions that could benefit. So might deer, coyotes, bobcats, and even frog snakes and lizards. Special care will be taken to bring in the right soil and have native plants. There will be massive sound barriers to dampen the noise of traffic. Streetlights may be shortened to darken the crossing. It's all to make the crossing as inviting as possible to wildlife. Robert Rock is the COO of Living Habitats and the lead architect.
We're going to end up having species that are going to call that crossing home because it's going to be this piece of habitat that they don't navigate out of.
The crossing is scheduled to open for animals to use by around late 2024. In Agoura Hills, I'm Michelle Loxton for Marketplace.
final note on the way out today, a little compare and contrast on the global shipping front. As of noon yesterday, there were 53 container ships hanging around off the coast of Los Angeles and Long Beach waiting to unload. That is down, if you might remember, from a high of 109 in January. So that's here. Over in China, the ports of Shanghai and Ningbo and the lockdowns that we've been telling you about, 104 ships out there waiting. That's from EC. It's a company that analyzes container ship schedules. Here's the thing. The usual backlog in Shanghai, zero. And here on the way out is your moment of economic context, the business and economic quote of the day today. Pick it up on the mention of Netflix's troubles in setting up Matt Levin's story a minute ago. Here's what else the company said today in its not-so-great earnings announcement. Our relatively high household penetration, the company said, when including the large number of households sharing accounts, is creating revenue growth headwinds. All you password sharers out there, they are coming for you. Our digital and on-demand team includes Kerry Barber, Siobhan Brett, Dylan Mietinen, Janet Wynn, Olga Oxman, Donna Tam, and Tony Wagner. I'm Kai Rizdal. We will see you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM. With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdal. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI? I mean, don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.